No, we'll be finished. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that later. Let me start. Let me get a reading on the volume here. So if you can just state your name and when you served in Southeast Asia.
Well, my name was in Vietnam with Sharon Monahan, M-O-N-A-H-A-N. It's now Sharon Hull, H-U-L-L.
Okay, that's fine. Let me do a... There we go. We're doing great. What years were you in Vietnam?
Well, I got there in December of 1965, left in November of
67. And what I'd like to do is just start with some just very, you know, basic background information. What year were you born?
1943.
And where were you born?
Pittston, Pennsylvania.
And what did your parents do?
They were just working people.
Mm-hmm. Well, did they have any particular religious affiliation or interest in public service?
Well, I was raised Catholic.
Uh-huh.
So they were involved with their church.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing extensive.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go to high school?
I went to high school in Connecticut. We moved to Connecticut when I was 13, and I went to high school in Naugatuck, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Naugatuck High.
And thereafter, you went to college?
Yes. I went to Hartford College for Women for 2 years, and then I went to the University of Connecticut.
And do you think that had any impact on shaping who you are today?
Of course. Everything we do shapes who we are.
Uh-huh. Were there any events that occurred at Hartford? I noticed on your data sheet that you mentioned that if there was an influence on your life, it was John F. Kennedy.
Right.
And how did his life touch yours?
Well, I was in 1960 when Kennedy was running for office. I was one of the girls for Kennedy, one of the young Democrats. And very excited at the time. I was all of 18 years old. Then when he came up with a plan, or they came up with a plan for the Peace Corps, I applied my freshman year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote me back and said, well, when you finish college and you're qualified to do something, then get back to us.
And what happened?
Well, I did. I graduated with a degree in teaching. On secondary level, and I wrote back and reapplied for the Peace Corps, and they wrote me back and said they still didn't have any positions that I would fit into, and I never did understand that.
Hmm. Before we go on to how IVS contacted you, what made you decide to become a teacher?
Well, truthfully, I did it because I wanted to travel. All my life I wanted to travel. And I was going to graduate with a degree in English and hadn't a clue what I was going to do with a degree in English. So it was my last 2 years of college that I decided on, or the last year and a half of college, that I decided on teaching and to get a degree so it would allow me to travel, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a lifelong passion. In fact, when I was young, I always said I didn't want to be a teacher or a nurse. Because those were the only options for women at that time, or for the main options. And I wanted to be a foreign correspondent or a diplomat or something that would allow me to travel.
Mm-hmm. That's actually very good thinking. And
I ended up being both.
You ended up being a?
A teacher and a nurse.
A teacher and a nurse.
A nurse now, yeah.
Uh-huh. And the two most valuable jobs in human civilization.
I guess.
Thank you very much. The Peace Corps turned you down, and I guess you were driven to desperation to put an ad in a newspaper, but how did it get to be the Paris edition of the New York Times?
Well, when I graduated from the University of Connecticut, I went to Europe for the summer and worked in a children's home in Germany. And before I finished my term there, I put an ad in the Paris edition of the New York Times. That American girl willing to go anywhere. Looking for employment starting that fall, I guess. 22 years old.
Uh-huh.
With a degree in English and education. And I got several replies, and one was from Peter Hunting from Vietnam, and he said, "Dear Miss about Vietnam.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. Came back to the States and applied to IVF and went into training that fall.
Well, we'll talk about the training in a second. I just a very quick aside. You did exactly what Florence Nightingale did.
Is that right?
Yes, that she wanted to be something more than the traditional woman's role that she felt women were being forced into by their parents. And she worked at the best word would be a hospital or near Karlsruhe, I think it was, and became involved in the statistics, health statistics, that is mortality rates, etc. And she helped invent the science of statistics. She's one of the world's first statisticians. And that's what started her on her career in nursing as well as in philosophy and many other fields of endeavor. So it's just an interesting thing that you would go into nursing having gone to Germany, and doesn't matter much. Anyway, I just want to let you know about that. So when you reapplied to IBS, did you go straight to San Francisco, or at that time were you going to Harpers Ferry for some training?
Went to Harpers Ferry.
And what was, you know, very few people can remember anything of that experience, except maybe a highlight or two. Is there anything you remember about it?
Well, I can still picture the area, and uh-huh. I have photographs from there, so, you know, it's from our training.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice experience, and meeting the groups that were going to Vietnam and to Laos at the time, made some friends.
Uh-huh.
The training itself, I couldn't tell you. I know what we covered, for mm-hmm. sure.
Would you remember anybody, the name of someone, even an ex-IVS or a former volunteer, who came and spoke to you?
No.
No? That's about average, by the way. It was kind of exciting. It was the thing you were going to do before you went off on this adventure, so not a lot of people were focused on that experience.
Uh-huh.
You were in education. But did you just go straight to Vietnam after Harpers Ferry? Or was there any intermediate?
We spent some time in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we went through language training.
Well, what was that like?
It was intense. Mm-hmm. It was intensive training, and I never did really get very good with Vietnamese. Mm-hmm.
And this was a Berlitz course?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It was, I think, 8 hours a day.
Right.
I don't know.
Was it by a native Vietnamese speaker? By the teacher, I mean.
I only have vague recollections of the training.
Mm-hmm. And how long was that?
I don't even know that for sure.
Oh, that's all right.
6 weeks, maybe? Hmm. 8 weeks? I don't remember.
And after that education, you didn't, did you go directly to Vietnam then?
Yeah, I wish I had read the letter. I was reading a letter to my folks that mm-hmm. I wrote from Washington. I didn't read those letters yet. About when I got to Washington, that we were supposed to be leaving right away, and I hadn't received the letter telling me that, and I didn't have any of my belongings together yet to make the trip, and I had them going out and buying me a trunk. And I guess I must have come home for a few days and just got everything packed up and sent, and off I went after the training.
Mm-hmm. And did you fly directly to Vietnam, or did you, you didn't stop in the Philippines for any additional training?
No, but we stopped in Hong Kong and Tokyo, I guess, on the way over.
Anything memorable about those stops? Did you do any shopping?
Oh, yeah. That was a fun time. Mm-hmm. I bought a guitar in Hong Kong so that I would have something to practice when I got to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And, did the usual sightseeing in Tokyo and Hong Kong. That was my first trip to Asia, of course. It was interesting. I took a lot of pictures.
Do you remember what month it was that you arrived in Vietnam?
December.
Mm-hmm.
Just before Christmas, I think a week or two before Christmas.
Well, then it was only 95.
Yeah.
What was your first impression when you stepped out of the airplane?
it really, you know, I didn't find it too bad. I remember I was reading one of the letters that one of the, while we were in Saigon, when we first got there, that it rained, and it was a beautiful rain. It was a warm downpour, and I loved it. I went out in the driveway of the IVF house in my bare feet and danced in the rain because it just felt so good and, you know, exhilarating. And then we spent, you know, I don't know how long, a week or something there. And I know we played a lot of cards. I got very good at bridge and cribbage while I was in Vietnam, and especially in Saigon. And then we went to Da Lat for the rest of our training and for Christmas.
And what was Christmas in Da Lat like?
It was beautiful. The weather was ideal. You know, it was cool and comfortable. The poinsettias were in bloom. And it was nice. I was really impressed with the area.
And Madame New still own the house behind the IVS house in Da Lat? Did that come up at all?
It might have. I don't remember. You know, most of the villas were previously French owned, and we stayed in one villa, I know. That was fairly comfortable.
Well, of course, when you arrived, the United States had just increased its troop total to over 187,000 troops. Although I'm sure, did you get any glimpse of that on your way up to Da Lat? Of course, Da Lat, you wouldn't see much of that, I'd imagine.
No, but I knew that I had arrived with about 100,000 GIs across Vietnam, and that was, at the time, was a real bane of contention with me, because whenever you'd run into a GI, like in Quy Nhon, they thought you were there because they were there, you know, and that really irritated me, and I feel bad now, really. I kind of treated some of the American military poorly, the average GIs, because I wasn't there because they were there, and you know, and it annoyed me that they thought I was. And they'd follow you in the streets, want to talk and stuff. And I would shun them, and I think later about it. Those poor kids were just there, but I was a kid too, so.
Well, you were much better off than Red Cross workers on, even on fire bases, all by themselves, with armed men getting Dear John letters. Life could be very, very hard.
Yeah.
So don't beat yourself up too much.
No, I don't.
Yeah, it was a tough social situation for everyone.
It was.
Yeah. What were your impressions of that? I mean, you volunteered to go to Vietnam because you wanted to see the world, you had some skills to share, but what did you think you were in Vietnam to do yourself?
Well, you know, I was one of these young people that was out to save the world, and always has. I wanted to do all I could to make the world a better place, and I had a lot of hard lessons to learn because of it. You know, I was very idealistic when I went, and of course came back not so idealistic anymore.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, because the realities of the situation hit me while I was there.
Well, what realities were there, I mean, as you look back at it?
Well, there was a war, for one thing, and a war-torn country is like nothing I had ever experienced, and I feel even today that the Vietnamese people weren't who they really are because of the war. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it was a very painful time for me. You know, like the first couple of months, you're in a state of euphoria. This is all new and exciting. And then I'm reading my letters, and I can see it didn't take too long before I was coming down to earth and feeling a little depressed. And I think culture shock caught up with me. I had a hard time putting together what was real. For the first time in my life, at that point, I questioned what was reality, because life in the States, as I knew it, was so different from life in Vietnam that I had a hard time putting it together, you know, making it.
Well, what is an example of that? That example where you don't know what reality is?
Well, there was so much suffering in Vietnam, and, you know, Quy Nhon was full of refugees. hundreds of thousands of refugees, children everywhere, street urchins, theft. You know, we got robbed a couple of times, and I couldn't relate to that either. Here I am trying to help you, and you're robbing me. You know, that didn't make sense to me.
You mean your room or on the street?
I broke into our house.
Uh-huh.
The whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that hurt, because I thought, you know, I was, I thought they should, at the time, I thought they should appreciate why I right?
You're right.
They could have cared less.
Right.
But I also had some wonderful experiences with, and that I'm reading this in my letters to my folks, too, mm-hmm. that, you know, the other people that I met, the Vietnamese people who were so kind to me and appreciated, they made up all the difference mm-hmm. for any of the wrongs that some of them might have done to me.
What were some of those kindnesses?
Sorry?
What were some of those kindnesses?
Oh, well, the principal of my school was a wonderful man and his wife, Mr. I. In fact, I still am in contact with him. He lives in California now. And I haven't had an opportunity to go see him, but that's on my agenda. They wanted me to move in with them. And they were just, you know, some of the people I met were always wanting to do things for you. One of the families that the president and his wife of the PTA of the school I was working at mm-hmm. were always taking me out to dinner or having me come to their house, and I taught English classes at their house. And, I don't know, just little things. Lots of my students were really nice. They would come to visit me all the time. They appreciated anything that I did. My neighbors were nice. I can think of anything more specific than that, but people were kind and accepting and interested, and I was, just a few American women in the area, we were always center of attention from the Vietnamese, because they, especially if you went to a remote area. I was reading about one little village that we went to, and this woman just stood there and stared at me for a long time. Couldn't take her eyes off me because she'd never seen a Caucasian woman before, I don't think. We went to villages. One village, one of our students lived, and they invited us into their home and were very hospitable and, you know, put out a wonderful spread of food for us. They were very, very giving that way, always willing to share even if they didn't have much themselves. So there were plenty of good people and good experiences that way.
Well, let's step back for a minute. You were in Dalat.
Uh-huh.
What kind would you get additional language training in Dalat?
I'm not sure if it was language training mm-hmm. so much as just kind of orientation to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember having language. I don't remember a lot. I remember we were sitting around in groups doing something, but I don't remember what it was. No.
Mm-hmm. And then you got your assignment from Dalat to go out to Quy Nhon?
Well, I guess I knew that in Saigon before we
uh-huh.
went to Dalat. They gave us our assignment and told us where we were going.
Okay, just for the transcriber, that's Quy Nhon. Right.
And I was quite pleased that the time with that assignment
mm-hmm.
because it was a coastal
mm-hmm.
City, really. It was a village at one time. And the climate was different from the Delta or from Saigon. We had even a different, reading my own explanations of this, even the rainy season was at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
We had the rainy season in January. When I got there, it was rainy season. And the weather was comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Temperatures were nice. The mountains in the background and the coast is beautiful.
Yes, it is spectacular.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country.
Yes. And what was your first day like? First of all, do you remember who your assistant chief of party was, the person responsible for you, so to speak, for IBS?
Well, Don Luce was there then.
Right.
And Gene Stoltz.
Stoltz was,
uh-huh.
Yeah, that's Oh boy, I hope I remember this right. S T O
L Z
L Z F U S. But there may be an extra T in there. But well, actually, I can look that up while you're talking.
O L T Z, maybe. Actually.
Yes. Let's just go on, and we'll get the spelling in a second. So do you remember how you got to Quinault?
Well, we flew into Saigon.
Uh-huh.
From Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how.
Well, did you go then to Dalat and then there, or?
We went to Quinyan. We just came into Quinyan and stayed at the IBS house at Quinyan.
Uh-huh.
And then we went from Quinyan to Dalat.
Ah, I see. So when you came back after the rest of your training, what was your first day at school like?
Well, you know,
I'm trying to get into that settling in period. You know, what was that?
I'm reading all my letters, and
uh-huh.
It seems like I hardly ever was in school.
Uh-huh.
We're always going someplace or doing something, it seemed like, and the school was always on vacation for one thing or another.
Uh-huh.
It was Christmas time, so
uh-huh.
Nothing really happened until January,
mm-hmm.
as far as going back to school. Or starting school, and Mr. I, who was the principal, was just really kind and really helpful. He helped me to get started. I don't think there was anything real traumatic about it. It was a pretty easy transition.
Mm-hmm. And this was a high school?
Yeah, it was a boys' technical high school.
And Mr. I would be spelled A-I for the...
Right, well, his name was Nguyen, Nguyen.
Mm-hmm. Win T-I?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. Let's see. Actually, what was... you had a roommate. So what was your housing like?
We had a nice little house in
mm-hmm.
right in town.
Mm-hmm.
Our next door neighbors were hookers, pretty much. We had a nice little family that lived... It was... The building was... We're all like all. It's almost like a house in a house. They were all joined together,
mm-hmm.
and we had we had two bedrooms, a little office den area, and then a big living room kind of space, and a little back patio with a little kitchen off of it. It was pretty decent.
You had an allowance for food. Did you hire a cook?
We did.
Mm-hmm.
Ko Hui.
Mm-hmm.
He was our cook. She was a cute little gal.
Mm-hmm.
Little buck tooth Vietnamese gal was always grinning
mm-hmm.
and laughing. And she didn't speak any English.
Mm-hmm.
And my Vietnamese was pretty rough, but we laughed a lot together.
Was she Vietnamese?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as opposed to Cham,
No, she was Vietnamese.
Uh-huh. Did you...
Come every morning.
Uh-huh.
Prepare some meals for us and
mm-hmm.
clean the house. Yeah.
And what did you have for breakfast?
Oh boy, I don't know. We pretty much ate Vietnamese. I loved Vietnamese food from
mm-hmm.
the day I got there.
Mm-hmm. What's not to love?
Yeah. I don't think there was anything I didn't like. I really liked Vietnamese. Bought from the local market,
uh-huh.
and of course, I guess was taught somewhere along the line to rinse all the fresh vegetables with a little bit of bleach in the water.
Uh-huh.
Not that that kept us from getting worms; we got them anyway.
Uh-huh.
But she did a pretty decent job. She just cooked up standard Vietnamese fare: rice and stir-fried vegetables, mostly, a little bit of meat.
Did you have soup for breakfast there? Or was it more like eggs or something like that?
Well, we probably had soup. I don't really remember.
Uh-huh. And were there any local sites you remember visiting in town?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then the military base was right there. And
right.
The hospital.
Uh-huh.
We made a lot of friends from there. And then there was a New Zealand surgical team that was working there, too, that we got to be very close with.
At the hospital?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, they worked at the Vietnamese hospital.
Right.
Yeah. And they were a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I made a lot of good friends from New Zealand. They were quite the characters.
You should look them up again and go see them.
Oh, yeah.
It's
wanted to.
Really one of the most wonderful countries to visit.
Yeah. They're phenomenal people, aren't they?
Yeah, very hospitable and very, very beautiful. It's like...
zany. Just zany, crazy kind of people at parties. We had some great parties.
Uh-huh.
Riding bicycles off of the vehicles and balancing on bottles, trying to light a candle. Just crazy stuff, you know. I could sit on a couch at a party with the New Zealanders and just laugh hysterically, not have to do anything else.
And you were what then, about 21?
I was 22 when I
came. Uh-huh, 22.
Yeah.
And now, of course, your roommate was Jeannie. That was a J-E-A-N-N-E?
Yeah, it was Jeannie.
Jean
Williams.
And she was also a high school teacher?
She taught in the normal school.
Oh, she taught in the normal school.
Right.
For the...
A couple of years older than me. I think she might have been 25 or something when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Great roommate. I couldn't have asked for a better.
Mm-hmm.
I really admired her and got along well. I mean, we just did so well together.
How was her Vietnamese?
Better than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then she ended up staying there for years after. I'm sure she got quite good.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for her some contact numbers. I'll see if we can interview her.
Yeah, she's worth interviewing,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
And so now you're in a town actually that's growing rather rapidly because of the war.
Yeah.
Refugees, of course, but also that was there were a lot of American military there. Did you ever visit a PX in town?
Oh, yeah. We shopped at the PX all the time.
Uh-huh. So you had PX
had privileges.
Privileges, and you also could use transportation. Could you not?
We could fly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, and again, the military was very good to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd go out and sit at the airport if we needed to fly to Saigon or anywhere, to Hue,
mm-hmm.
or Da Nang or Nha Trang, and just catch a flight.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, because we were American females, we got to ride up front with the crew, even, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of fun. So, yeah, we were well treated that way.
Uh-huh.
And if we got off and needed a ride back to our house or whatever, there was always somebody who would offer us transportation or
mm-hmm.
papers. We really had it made in lots of ways.
And, let's see. This was more of an issue in Laos than it was in Vietnam. But was there any kind of second thoughts about using the PX? I mean, it was, U.S. military as opposed to, you know, the civilian status that IVS maintained. Was there ever any second thoughts about that ever?
You know, I don't think I did.
Uh-huh.
No. I dissociated myself from the military in other ways, but that
mm-hmm.
wasn't one of them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, school teachers in a foreign country, just because you go to American Express to pick up your mail isn't a great cultural compromise, so, especially in a big city. Let's see, did you have much contact with Jean or anyone else who was supposed to actually monitor your activities?
Yeah, well, they came, they made periodic visits to us,
mm-hmm.
and we went to Saigon for meetings
mm-hmm.
and updates.
Mm-hmm. And did you go up to Da Lat for any other holidays? Like 4th of July?
No. I think I was only in Da Lat the one time.
Mm-hmm. And you said did you have an opportunity to go to...
And Da Nang,
uh-huh.
And to Hue.
Mm-hmm. Nhatrang, two words, and Hue, Hue. Do we get them all there, or?
And went down to the Delta to visit another IBSer. I don't know if you ever got a hold of a gal named Vicki Maris, or her name used to be.
No.
She was from Illinois, I think.
Uh-huh.
good friends and tried to travel together when we could over there.
Mm-hmm. And where was she? Do you remember the town?
Bin Long, I believe.
Oh, okay.
B-I-N-H-L-O-N-E. Mm-hmm.
And,
I went to visit her down there.
Mm-hmm.
One time.
Was there any cultural shock visiting the Delta?
It was very different.
Uh-huh.
From Queenan, yeah.
Yeah, what struck you as different?
Well, it was a lot hotter, for one thing.
Yeah.
And a lot flatter.
Mm-hmm.